I guess I'd just like to reiterate that the solutions are here. We've got all the solutions available to us, I have no doubt. Spin things on a dime, you know, and all the, New Zealand could be organic in 3 years' time.
Thank you.
I have no doubt that's possible. It's just really once the will is in place, that's all that's limiting it. So here's hoping that something like that will occur.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Havelock North in the Hawke's Bay, I have Glenn Atkinson. And Glenn has been in the field that is very extensive from the standpoint that he has been involved in agriculture, in particular the astrological or the celestial influences that influence the whole of humanity on this planet. And he also has been involved in the healing arts, particularly, again, the very subtle aspects of homeopathy. And what's happened is that Glenn has recently been honoured by the Permaculture Society and been given a doctorate for his services and his work for the human race and for making us more healthy. So I want to say, kia ora, Glenn, thank you for wanting to speak to all people.
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glenn, just to cover this wonderful honour of yours, could you tell the listeners how that came about?
Okay. First of all, it's the Permaculture International College, and one of the members of that college is Steve Hart, who some people will know. He's been involved in permaculture right from the start, and I've known Steve since 1991, so he's kept an eye on all of my developments over all the years, and so he took the steps with their college to put me forward for a PhD with them. And it was a bit funny in that he asked me for documentation and so on, and I just said, well, just go to my website, the Glenopathy website, and it's all there. So I didn't give it another thought, really. So it was quite a surprise when I came home and there was about 30-odd people there giving me this award. So that was fun, really, that I didn't have to do lots of extra work other than what I'd already done.
Well, that's right. I mean, you've got a massive amount of work that you've been doing, because the last time I saw you, you were in Te Puke in the middle of a kiwi fruit area that they were spraying crazily all these different chemicals, and you had also decided to bring about and make a homeopathic spray so that you could combat all these different diseases that seems to be predominant now in the Western world, particularly in industrial agriculture or factory agriculture. And so this new way of looking at things at a very finite level, the invisibles that you're actually working with, isn't it?
Yes, true. The basis of the work in agriculture comes from Dr. Rudolf Steiner. People will know the education usually, but he's also gave these indications for agriculture. And the whole basis of that is this time theorem, as above, so below. And so what that's really saying is that if we look at the structure of creation above us, we can get the sort of pattern or the model that we can use for looking at us and the organization that occurs within us. And the sort of basis of that whole story is that when we look where we are, we're on a planet for a start, and that planet, out of its own life processes, has created an atmosphere that concentrates oxygen and therefore supports life on Earth. And then the planet, of course, is sitting in the solar system, which is a reality, you know, a sun with all these planets, and they're all sitting within the sun's magnetic field. And that field is like an onion, rings of magnetism, and the planets run around on those rings. And then, of course, beyond that, we have stars. So our sun is a star, but then we have billions of stars within our galaxy. And then, of course, beyond that, there's billions of galaxies. So the reality of where we're living is that we have this star realm, the planet realm, the atmosphere, and then we have the earth. And so there's these four great dimensions that exist. And so what Steiner said was that those four great realms work into towards us, because of course all the stars are beaming forces at us. When we hear that there's as many stars in the sky as grains of sand on the planet, then we've got this image that we're living in the middle of this energetic hologram, that all these stars are beaming force at us for billions of years constantly, and in the middle of all that, where we are, we're held by this ocean of energy. And then within that, we've got the solar system organizing things, and then within the planet, it organizes its own thing. And so we have these four great sort of realms of activity. And Steiner used the words that the Hindus used, which for the star realm, he called that spirit, and for the planetary realm, astral activity, for the atmosphere, etheric, and for the physical, of course, is the physical. And so the image is that each of the four kingdoms of nature use those four activities in increasing complexity. So the mineral kingdom's just the physical body. And then the plant kingdom has this growth and life, and so it includes the atmosphere. And then the animal kingdom that has movement and some degree of consciousness brings in the astral planetary sphere. And then, of course, for the humans, we bring in the star qualities and show up as our self-consciousness. And so, basically, we're just looking at everything being a manifestation of just those four things. And so if we can bring them into balance, then we have health. And if there's any imbalance anywhere in those four activities, then we get ill health. And so it's a fairly simple game, really, but it is based upon reality. The planets are real. The stars are real. So we are dealing with reality when it comes down to it.
This is fantastic, yes. Well, it's only in the last 40 years have scientists like David Bohm recognised the fact that we live in a holographic environment and that we have holons. We are a holon, and we vibrate at a particular frequency, and we're nested in smaller organs right down to the molecular and then down to the atomic, and then on the other side we're planetary, and then we're solar systems and galactic, etc. So, yeah, this is wonderful, Glenn. I really appreciate how you're coming at this. And you have your website. Now, I think I just want to introduce this, and it's GarudaBD.org. GarudaBD.org. And can you tell how people can understand Garuda?
Things have developed over many years. So I started on this path when I was 19 or so. And the first step was I'd come across the Hare Krishna movement in Australia, where I grew up. And Garuda was the Hare Krishna name that I was given, you see. But Garuda is an eagle incarnation of Vishnu, their primary god. And so part of the point of the eagle is the ability to look at the big picture and see the fine detail. And in a sense, that's what I've been doing. Like, as I just described, we have this big picture of creation, but we can bring it right down to the smallest sort of organizational activity. So I've stuck with that. I like that eagle motif of seeing the big picture.
It's interesting because Indonesian Airlines, I think, have their name as Garuda as well.
Yeah.
Which, from the standpoint that they're a Muslim country now, but they used to actually be a Hindu country a long, long way back, and something still held.
Yeah, and of course Bali is still quite Hindu.
Very much so, yes. Now, Glenn, your gyroscope.
Oh, yes.
You did give me one. I've got one. I've still got it in my collection in the corner of my room, among all my other knickknacks from a planetary perspective. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about this? Because I've seen the, shall we say, the periodic table, and it's rectangular shaped. And they've been adding these. As the time of the Enlightenment, when the scientists back in the 1600s and 1700s starting to study existence from a scientific viewpoint, they brought this periodic table out. Now, you have taken it the next step. Can you explain?
Yeah, the periodic table of chemical elements is, as you say, it's drawn as a rectangle, and what they found is that there's these sort of family groups of elements. And so primarily there's eight major groups of elements, and then there's 10 groups of trace elements, and then there's these 14 groups of rare earth elements. And so it's out of their observation, they've developed this table. And of course, in each family, there's these seven layers. Some have elements in those manifest and other layers don't. Now, the thing that struck me is, of course, I started to study soil science as part of agriculture. And what we come to is, of course, that everything is atoms. And so atoms are these spherical balls of energetic activity. Once something moves, it starts to spin and it polarizes, and then it creates this sort of toroidal form that's become quite common.
Yes.
You know, these days.
Yes.
Well, that's the pattern of existence, a sphere. And everything is a sphere. You know, we all have our energetic activity around us, and so we're an energetic sphere, and plants are an energetic sphere, and everything is an energetic sphere. And so when we're talking about chemistry and we're looking at this rectangular pattern, and we sort of think of an element like, let's say, calcium, then what we've got to do is we've got to create in our mind this sort of nucleus with so many protons and neutrons, and then two or three rings of electrons. And some of those rings, they're not full. They can take more electrons. And this becomes the basis of the interaction of the element. If a ring's not full, then it'll go and jump onto some other element to fill that energy lack. And this is how we get the chemical interactions. So it's really an interplay of spheres. And so we're forever making that adjustment between the rectangle and the sphere. And I think people find that difficult. It's one of the hurdles in coming to grips with chemistry. And so it struck me that why don't we draw this as a sphere? But first of all, why don't we draw it as a circle and start from there? And of course, there's three groups of elements, as I said before, the majors, the traces, and the rare earth. And so they're different numbers. There's eight major families, there's 10 trace elements, and there's 14 rare earths. Now, if we look at music, and of course my background in astrology informs this as well, because of course in an astrology chart we have these different angular relationships. We have, you might call them 30-degree relationships, 45-degree relationships, and 72-degree relationships between the planets. And so that gives you the idea, as in music, that there's a third harmonic, a fourth harmonic, and a fifth harmonic. And just as the fourth in music is discordant, whereas the third is harmonious and friendly, so that's what happens between the planets. And so this is what we can see in chemistry, is that there's a fourth harmonic in the major elements, because there's eight of them, and then there's a fifth harmonic in the trace elements. And so it gave me the impression that they were different. They were running on these different sort of harmonics, as it were, frequencies. And so we could see them as groups. And if we start to get this idea that everything's a sphere, and therefore a circle is one 360-degree slice of a sphere, so we get that the circles resonate with the spheres, and we can come back to that later, but it's quite an important thought that every circle resonates with everything in creation. But in the development of the chemistry, it was, well, we've got these three groups of elements, and they can all be put on an individual sphere. Now, what happens when we put something on a circle, as we know in astrology, is that we start getting these angular relationships. Elements sit opposite each other. They sit at a 90-degree angle to each other, you know, a 30-degree angle to each other. And so what starts to happen when we put things on a circle is that we start to see relationships between the elements that aren't obvious in the rectangle. And one of the classics of this is phosphorus and potassium sit opposite to each other and on a circle. And in agriculture, this is one of our greatest issues, that originally when people started farming here, they realized they lacked phosphorus. So along came superphosphate, which in itself is a very good fertilizer. And they piled the phosphorus in, but then they realized that the potassium was not active. And so they just went, oh, well, we'll just pile in the potassium. And so along comes potassium sulfate and potassium chloride, and they pile that in, and then all of a sudden they realize they're locking up all the calcium and the phosphorus. And so this is actually one of the biggest dilemmas of modern agriculture, especially in New Zealand, is that we've got this excess of potassium, and although the calcium and the phosphorus is sitting there in the soil, it won't be released. And once I did my circular periodic table, it became very clear that it was this excess of potassium that's blocking all the phosphorus. And so I made up a product that would suppress the potassium, and all of a sudden out comes all the phosphorus, and then the calcium comes out a little bit later. So it's these relationships that start to become very obvious once you see it in a circle. Now, just to go a little bit further, one of the other things that happened was, of course, once we've got all these three different groups of elements on a circle, then we can put them on top of each other. And so all of a sudden, we can see which trace elements have a particular relationship to the major elements. And so again, there's this sort of interrelationship between all these elements that is impossible to see on a rectangular pattern. So really, the rectangle doesn't work because it's not real. Chemistry doesn't organize according to a rectangle. It organizes according to spheres, as in atoms.
Thank you for this, Glenn. Last year I was on the island of Samos in the Greek of Aegean. That's where Pythagoras was born, and he said one of the two things that I think very interesting was that he said when we meditated, we could actually sit still and we could hear the music of the spheres of the planets humming. And as we know, each planet spins at a different speed in our solar system. Some are big, some are small, and they each have a different musical note. And so this is where harmonics come in, this is where sound, this is where music comes in, and so it's all tied in together, isn't it?
Most definitely. There's books written on the musical relationship to chemistry and how they all fit together.
Yes, well, this is wonderful stuff, Glenn. Can I just quickly jump in? We have tens of thousands of hectares of land locked up and we can't use in this country because of cadmium. Can you add anything to that one?
Well, this is coming through the phosphate fertilizer, essentially. And one of the things that cadmium does, of course, is that it's in the same family as mercury and zinc. Now, zinc is on my circle. I probably need to digress just a minute to say that in the work I've done, of course, I've sort of looked into circles and the organization of circles and so on. And so I have developed a pattern of the energetic activity of all these different points in the circle. And zinc is this element that is sitting fairly close to helping the etheric or the life processes work into the physical body. And we know that zinc is this sort of primary element that helps with fertility of plants and people and is a primary health element.
Prostate gland for men?
Yes, it's really critical. If you lift up the cadmium or mercury in an environment, then it's going to debilitate the zinc. And once the zinc is debilitated, it also debilitates the opposite element, which is manganese. And so there's this sort of interaction between those two that show up, like manganese shows up in good seed development and so on. So for plants to reach the end of their life, they've got to actually have good manganese. And the zinc and manganese interplay facilitates all that fertility in that process. So by upping the mercury and cadmium, it knocks out that basic fertility process. And as you'll see that not only, you know, as we've put on lots of phosphate, and I should say my garden, which is about 80 years old, has got 10 times the amount of phosphate in it that it should have, and that causes trouble. It knocks out all sorts of other elements. And so on these farms where we've got lots of phosphate, which means we've got lots of cadmium, not only are we knocking the zinc out, but as I mentioned, we're getting incredibly high levels of potassium to balance out the phosphate. And that causes all levels of metabolic dysfunction as well. Runny cows, you know, that's all too much potassium. And so if you're knocking out your fertility and you're messing up your potassium, your metabolic system, then you've got a really inefficient system. And it's not uncommon for dairy farms to have 25% empty cows. They just don't get pregnant. And this then adds up as a cost where the vet comes out every day to get artificial insemination. So it's just this cascade of disasters, really, when you've got all these elements.
Yes, because we have a situation in New Zealand now. We've got people like Graham Sait, and we've had Arden Anderson, and we had Christine Jones and Phil Gregory. And we're looking now at biological and regenerative farming where we don't use chemicals. We look at the minerals and we do a BRICS test of the soil and we balance it all out. You are surrounded by farmers who are actually doing that in your local region, are you not?
Yeah. Yep. There's quite an active movement. And one of the good things about this area, like while we have the orchards that use lots of chemicals, the actual sheep and beef community, which is quite large around here, they haven't had enough money to be able to put on the fertilizer that destroys the soil, you see. So apart from a bit of weed drench and a bit of thistle spray, there's been quite a movement towards, let's call it a healthy fertilizing program, based on the fact they can't spend a lot of money. And so a lot of the sheep and beef people are sort of verging on organic anyway. And, of course, the regenerative agriculture is bringing in grazing systems that aren't too dissimilar to what they've been using for a long time anyway. Really, they're just saying leave the grass a bit longer, don't eat it down. But the mob stocking and so on that regenerative's talking about is the farmer's been doing that for quite a long time anyway. So they're on the way. They're well on the way. And regenerative's just helping that whole process.
Well, this is where I think New Zealand farmers, as you say, they're moving this way, which means there could be a whole new breakthrough, a renaissance in the way we farm our land. And so New Zealand might be able to do something really good. We produce healthy food on the land, the livestock are healthy, humans are healthy, and the ecosystems are healthy too, that the creeks and the streams will run clean in comparison to how they've been taken on so much in the way of chemicals. And we had a stream running through our place back in the 1940s and the 50s. And when I was a kid in the 1950s, our stream was just pure. You could see all the yellow, white, brown, orange stones in the river, and you could look down 3 feet to 6 feet down. And now if you go, you'll see just green slime everywhere. And so this is a result of all the runoff of these chemicals. So I think there's a big change on the way, and this is going to be really, really good for New Zealand if we can get everybody on board.
Yeah. Now, the central issue with this whole debate is the high levels of high analysis urea and phosphate that they're putting on the farms. And so it's not uncommon for a dairy farm to be putting on 450 kgs of nitrogen, water-soluble nitrogen, per year. And what has been shown by people like Mike Joyce...
Yeah, Mike Joyce.
..and his friends...
Yes.
..is that dairy farms can actually run quite efficiently on around 35 kgs of soluble nitrogen without too much trouble. And by bringing in the regenerative agriculture soil development process and just not killing the soil, like when you put ammonium sulfate onto the soil, it kills all the worms. And so at that point, your dung pads that sit on the ground won't break down. And so they'll sit there for months on end. And of course, that stops the grass growing. Whereas if you've got a healthy soil and worm life and even dung beetles, then all of that dung gets sort of taken into the ground and starts to act as a big sponge. And so any urine that comes from a cow or any water that comes actually has to go through this big humic sponge. And so that slows the water runoff. And so the more nitrogen you put in, the more all the carbon in the soil gets burnt off. And so you mineralize your soil, so you lose that big sponge. And so not only are you putting on 10 times too much fertilizer, but there's nothing to hold it. And so it just runs straight through to the rivers. So it's not the cows that are causing the trouble in the rivers, it's the actual fertilizer. And of course, there's plenty of research now, and I understand even LandCorp has been working with Mike Joy and Alison Jews, Dr. Alison Jews.
Yes.
And that they have actually shown a production system, and that that is now slowly being sort of rolled out across New Zealand. But of course, the farmers have all got shares in the fertilizer companies.
Yes.
And so they don't want their profits to be diminished. So they don't want less fertilizer to be put onto the farms. And so there's this huge industry backlash against this, what is inevitable. This low-input farming system is inevitable, and there's a huge backlash. And part of the propaganda is that they're saying it's the cows that are causing the trouble, and it's not. It's actually the fertilizer causing the trouble. And I was just talking with a farmer the other day who's been fencing off all of his waterways and things, and he's saying, well, now he's got this huge weed problem that all the blackberry and stuff is all coming up inside between the fence and the creek.
Yes.
And so he's got this huge issue with having to keep that tidy, whereas if he just was allowed to have sheep that would graze right down to the edge of the creek, then everything would be sort of kept under control. And so this is a looming problem that may well bankrupt quite a few farmers having to maintain these waterways that they've been forced to fence off. And as I say, it's not the cows, it's actually the fertiliser.
Thank you for that. I think it's very important. Now, there's one small thing. Sometimes a cow will go down to the river and they may break away the river bank slightly, particularly if they've got to just step into the creek. And I have noticed a few times when cows have sort of broken the edge and allow soil to get into the creek. But maybe sheep are more agile and don't necessarily...
Well, they're lighter and yes, they don't. But what's wrong with a bit of soil in a creek? This is a natural process. The point is with creeks and rivers is that they run and they bubble and they go through vortexing and, you know, they oxygenate themselves. So they actually have a self-cleaning mechanism. And as I say, the amount of actual manure that gets into a river is insignificant in comparison to the enormous quantities of high analysis nitrates and phosphates that are being poured into the river. And so, as I say, let's get rid of the fertilizer first and then have a look and see where our rivers are. Because cows have been in rivers. When you were a kid, there were cows in the rivers.
That's right. We had a situation there. I'd watch our cows, as I heard, 100 cows cross the river, and for about 200 metres, there'd be cow crap and shit going down in the river, and then the cows would get on the other side. Well, now we've got a bridge there. So if you put a bridge across, then your cows are not going to crap in the river. So that one's actually been solved.
Well, it has, but as I say, the river is self-cleaning, and there's lots of fish and things that live on all of those bits of manure or whatever. And as I say, at the time when you were saying the river was all clean and pristine, well, the cows were in the river. It wasn't the cows causing the trouble. It's the fertilizer causing the trouble.
Yes, yes, I thought it might have been a combination, that's all. Oh, well, that's good, Glenn. I'm glad to hear that because, I mean, I used to swim and drink when I was a kid. And now,
yep.
Now I'm reluctant to put my head under the water. But yes, so that's part of this shift in this agricultural change. I'm speaking with Glenn Atkinson, who recently received a Doctor of Philosophy by the Permaculture International College, and we're covering farming and also the revolutionary way of looking at the periodic table of atomic elements and many other natural systems. website garudabd.org. GARUDABD.org. So, Glenn, some of the other things, you're talking the circle of everything.
Yes,
and I mean, when we look at the sun, it's round. When we look at the moon, it's round. Everything is round. The electrons spin around a nucleus. And so I just like roundness because it's full.
Yeah, well, that's true. But as I say a bit earlier, I said every circle is in a sort of harmonic resonance. Everything is a sphere. Everything is an energetic sphere. And that a circle is really just a slice of that sphere. And so the circle resonates with everything in creation, or has the potential to resonate with everything in creation. Now, the interesting thing is that any circle that you've got, be it a circular table, be it a plate, be it a diagram of a circle, or even if you look in your garden, you may have some circle there in bricks or whatever. But once you start looking, you'll see that nature makes circles. And I've noticed recently that basically on the shady side of every tree, every sort of specimen tree, on the shady side, you'll see that there's a circle in the ground. And you'll see that there's a middle circle, which might be about 2 feet in diameter. And then the other circle will basically be out to the edge of the shady zone that the tree gives, you see. Now, of course, there's going to be huge pressure and temperature differences between the sunny part of the ground and the shady part. And so just in that sort of phenomena of cold and hot, you're going to get this sort of movement taking place. But we've got to get it that we're sitting in the Earth's magnetic field. And so if we get a circle and we find out where magnetic north is, then everything in that circle will organize according to that magnetic north. And so in my pictures, I've worked out the internal organization of circles, and I put chemistry over the top of that. And so every circle organizes that universal pattern within it. And so in that process, we have the ability, therefore, to see that in every circle, all of the elements of chemistry will organize within there. And so the actual physical element itself won't manifest, but the energetic activity of that element will manifest. And so if we do something like bark flowers, you know, where you're getting a petri dish, a silica petri dish, and you're putting water in there, and then you're putting some flower petals in there and letting the sunshine run through the water and the flower petals. And so you then collect up that water, and you can dilute it with some brandy, I think they use normally. And then that can be further diluted. And I don't know about you, but I've had really good experiences with bark flower remedies over the years. And so what we can do is get a bottle of silica, put water in it, and then put it in any particular spot within the circle, and we will accumulate that energy of that chemical. Whatever the chemical is in that spot, we will accumulate that energy. And then that can actually be used as a remedy. And of course, that same spot in any circle will accumulate the same energy. So we've been doing that for some years, and I feel pretty okay about that system, enough to tell you about it. Now, the sort of logical conclusion of this is that if the circle is a universal harmony organizing device, as the Islamic culture will tell you, we've been worshipping circles for thousands of years. You know, the Chinese have the I Ching and the Feng Shui, and the Tibetans have all their mandalas and all their stupas, and the Islamic culture has these octagonal buildings, and even the Christian culture have their cathedrals that are based upon a square. So we've been honouring circles forever. And so the question comes, well, if circles are energetic organising devices, then everything in creation should be able to be found within the circle. And in the process of developing the circle, you know, there's an area that the spirit dominates, an area that the astral dominates, an area etheric, and the others the physical. And so, of course, the four kingdoms of nature fit into that. And so in the physical sphere is the mineral kingdom, the plant is the etheric, the animal is the astral, and the human is the spirit area. And so in that diagram that I created, I put all of botany in that plant area and
yes.
all of the animal kingdom in the other area. And we've been playing around there with looking at where are the insects in that diagram and where is the difference between the blood-sucking insects like mosquitoes and ticks and so on, and also flying insects, which, of course, are a pain in the neck for agriculture. And then we have the grub insects as well. And we've been playing around with collecting the energy of those spots in the circle, and they've been showing benefit. We've been getting rid of bugs and getting rid of mosquitoes and all of that sort of thing. So that's where the circle of everything came from, just that logical progression of the thought. And when you go and play around with it, it sort of shows some benefit, really. So there's all sorts that can come out of that diagram. I'm looking at a weed control system that we've done a little bit of work on. So there's lots there. And I've got to say that in my own sort of work, in my own process, I've been always moving forward. And I've got to say, with the circle of everything, I feel like I've come to a bit of a conclusion.
Full circle.
That's sort of the end. But there's a lot to be filled out along that path that I've walked to just see where the edge is. You know, I keep finding new things. And there's a lot of work that can be done to put the flesh on the bones, really.
Yes, it's a wonderful breakthrough, Glenn, seeing it that way, because I know, I mean, ourselves, I mean, at heart, we want to express love and we want to express it all around us, above us and below us, so that we are like an orb in motion, because it's wholesome to be in a circle.
Most definitely, most definitely. When I've asked the Islamic people what all those patterns in Persian carpets that we have everywhere, they've all got those octagonal patterns sitting in the middle of them. And when I asked them about it, they just said, oh, it's just a pattern of universal harmony and order. And that's why they have it everywhere, because that pattern sort of helps to create that order in the environment. And so that's our old understanding of what these circles are. So why not? Here it is. Been with us forever.
It certainly has. That we can agree. And Glenn, have you got a vision of how you would like to see New Zealand grow or the human species come together as a global family?
Well, you know, I can imagine and vision and hope, but I'm relatively pessimistic, to tell you the truth. I've got to say that I've done all this work that I've done for my own interest. A, because there hasn't been a lot of people interested in it, and B, I don't know how long humanity is going to be around to be able to make use of it. It's easy in the past, you know, you could say, oh, well, in 100 years' time, people will get this stuff.
We haven't got time.
Wonderful, but maybe we don't have that long, because I've sort of come to realise that the problems keep coming back to the fact that we're sort of pretty highly populated with psychopaths. And that we've even been breeding them for thousands of years. With all of our warfare and so on, it's only the psychopaths that survived. And so the problem with psychopaths is that they always want to win at all costs. It's not about good or morality or what's right. It's about winning. And so every time somebody or some country takes a positive step, then there's going to be another country or people who are profiting from that. And so can humanity do what's best for itself is really the question. I know plenty of people who would like to do better and have all that intention, but the way our society is structured and the depth of corruption that's obviously manifesting at the moment, you've got to wonder, like we've got Bernie Sanders sitting there as the obvious person who's best for the situation, but what's the chance of him actually getting to be president, you know? Even though it's the most obvious, common sense, benefit of the planet guy, you know. So anyway, I'm actually quite pessimistic about humanity's ability to survive.
Well, I mean, we never can tell. There's an old saying, a little hinge can swing a very large door. Or the other thing, behind every dark cloud shines a very bright sun. And I'm in the school of thought that we're only a few minutes before the dawn. In winter, dawn comes very quickly. And so I'm still trusting because, see, your information is really, really critical. It's just it's how we get it out. And Kiwis, you know, greenplanetfm.com, boy, I would really love Kiwis to get out and start networking. For some unknown reason, New Zealanders don't want a network. And there's problems with that. Maybe it's because the Kiwi bird doesn't like the light, hides around in the dark and can't even fly and get a greater overview, which is not necessarily a good symbol for our country.
No, it's not really.
It's a terrible. And so we have to have a look at a new symbol for our country. You know, Godwit, the Kuaka, if it gets cold and dark in winter here, it'll fly all the way up to Alaska before that happens and spend summer up there basking in spring and summer up there. And then finally, when it gets cold up there, it'll do the 11,500 8-day trip down to New Zealand or around the curve to New Zealand and appropriately land exactly where they're supposed to land. And so there's this inbuilt intelligence in the Gaian system, and I think that there's more to come. I mean, I've just been looking at the bacteria and the fungi, and the bacteria that can actually bore into solid rock, and we're only just getting an understanding of what's going on under the soil, and I can't believe that maybe 30 metres below me there would be all these fungi and bacteria that if we took all these wrigglies out and put them on the surface of the soil, they'd come to about 2 metres of all these wriggly things. And so I'm going forward, and I just want to know now, with your homeopathy, see, Prince Charles was here in this country just very, very recently, and I don't know if you saw the Facebook. There's a lovely American woman who's down in South Island. She happened to go to a farmer's market, and she was there, and then Prince Charles comes walking along, and she puts her hand out and shakes his hand and looks him in the eye and says, I want to just thank you so much for what you have done for homeopathy in the time that you've been here on Earth. And he looked clearly at her and said, have you got a strong homeopathic base here in New Zealand? And she said, yes, there's a lot of people interested in homeopathy. And he said, well, look, I thank you, and I trust that New Zealand really does well with that because in Britain we are being pushed down.
Most definitely.
And yet he was the chairperson or the patron of the homeopathic society there.
Oh, good on him.
So anyway, this information came out and it was shared a lot on Facebook. And all I'm saying is it gave us inspiration to be able to want to take it further to realise that there is still a great opportunity for us to bring about this change. So, Glenn, what other things that you are interested in from a standpoint of being in the middle of an agricultural area in Hawke's Bay? They've just become, in your area, Hastings, a GE-free area. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes, because we've got quite a strong apple, organic apple growing thing here with Bostocks, and that extends out to vegetable growing as well. They do quite a lot of vegetables. And we have egg producers, we have other fruit producers here. So there is quite a strong organic movement here in its own way. There's still quite a lot of chemicals and things going on here as well. Now, I just go back a second to what you were just saying, and I'd like to say that, yes, I believe we have all of the tools that we need now to make the changes that need to happen. It's really just about the will to implement them. Back in the 60s and 70s, we didn't actually have the knowledge, whereas now we do. And so the potential for that change is incredibly high. But again, as I say, it's about the will to bring that change about. Now, just looking, I guess part of your question was what I'm up to now. I have a fairly active sort of research process going on and my own small scale. And there's always this big question about fungal control. And one of the sort of limiting factors, even in the apple industry, is that they spray a tremendous amount of lime sulfur, which is a chemical that, okay, it stops the black spot and so on, but it does cut down the photosynthesis ability of the plant. And so it can affect the quality of the fruit. And so fungus is still a pretty big problem in organic agriculture for the grapes and for stone fruit and all these things. And so I've been doing this, playing around with fungal protection for 25 years, I guess. So every year I get a little bit closer. And I've been very pleased with the latest version of this fungal control. It seems to work very well against powdery mildew and various rots on things. And so that's been one of my focuses of late. And we're always looking at just how we can help the plants grow in a healthier manner. So that's what I've been doing lately.
Yes, well, you are grounded in Rudolf Steiner and biodynamics, which is a very, very cosmic way of going about farming. And there's Peter Backus, and I did an interview of him in 2018, and he's saying then, and now there's only 97 years now since biodynamic farming came into being, so we've got 3 years to get this wonderful ideal out. And, yeah, well, this is it. I mean, I can say it, and I don't want you to say it. We have got huge problems with federated farmers, and we also have problems in Fonterra. We have got blokes, Kiwi jokers, who have not got out of a swamp, and the swamp needs to be drained. And we have to be able to get new people into the federated farmers, and because once upon a time, they actually had some organic leaders. This is back 20 years ago, they had organic leaders, and now they've got chemical and GE leaders.
And of course,
and this is, you know, majorly problematic, and we've just got to get around this one, because New Zealand, you know, once was a great leader on so many levels, and since our nuclear-free breakthrough back in 1987, we've slumbered a wee bit, and yet we, as a small, dynamic country, a country small like us, we can change far faster than a gigantic country like America or China, because you have to change more people's minds. And I just think there that one of the things is education and how we actually get the information out. TV New Zealand, Radio New Zealand, they are glossing over a lot of things now and again. Radio New Zealand brings through new innovative programs, but they don't continue it. Then there's no continuity of making conscious decisions to see if we can lift the whole awareness of New Zealand to have high quality food, which then makes us healthy, which then gives us a far better outlook. There's still a huge way to go.
Well, this is where it comes back to the psychopaths, really, isn't it? They're in all the positions, and they're the ones that are holding it all up, really, and they don't really function on morality. They function on power and the money. And so we come back to the political system where these corporations are allowed to fund particular political candidates who, of course, you know yourself, the whole fight with GE, it's all these unemployed, self-employed individuals fighting against these sort of massive corporations with millions and millions of dollars, and whereas otherwise it's all these individuals trying to put up some sort of defence. So the way the whole game is set up, it's always against the truth, moral right. And as I say, that's the blockage that I see. And I just sum it up as psychopath, because anybody with half a brain would be able to see what's right. But we don't. We actually keep having these psychopaths controlling everything and continuing to mess it up. And so not until the thing is on its last legs that we then have to come along and try and fix it up. Any alternative consultant will tell you that most of the people that come and see them are just about bankrupt. And only then do they look at alternatives, and they've got no budget left to fix the problems, you see. And that's what we'll do. It's only when everything is just about finished, that they'll start looking for the alternatives to fix that. Then we've got to start from a much lower position than we could have if we would have got in years earlier.
Well, I agree with you. It's interesting how this whole thing has happened. I did an interview with my doctor on psychopaths and sociopaths on greenplanetfm.com, and it was very interesting. He's really got a handle on it. He sees what they're doing and how we can, with a bit of luck, if we commit to commit and then to organise in cells and then in clusters of cells, I think this is the only way we're going to get any traction, because we can't really trust social media because we're listened into all the time. And we need to actually just work quietly within small clusters of groups right across New Zealand. I mean, I've been involved with the GE Free Northland, and yeah, I've had to go and do presentations to city councils, etc. Mm. It's been a battle, a major battle.
Massive. And you're funding all that yourself.
Too darn right. I mean, everything's been funded by the activists. You can always tell an activist's home is because the lawns are long and the weeds are in the garden because they're too busy being activists.
and it takes a toll, you know, whereas these other people, yeah, you're getting paid to be there. It's their job to fight in the court and just make it as long as possible. And, it's completely unfair and as a situation, but, you know, what can you say?
Well, I think, again, higher consciousness. We have to actually start working on ourselves. I'm saying to kids, little bright sparks who come up, and they are still, I spend a lot of time with children, and they still have got lots of up and go. They're still optimistic and positive solely because they don't know the horrible storm clouds everywhere.
Well, they don't have to pay bills every week. My sort of joke about the hippies was that it only lasted 3 years. I mean, we'll have to go back to town and get jobs.
Well, this is the truth. This is a big one. So I'm making sure that all the kids that come up to me and they're alert and they're intent and communicating with me, I remind them of their inner candle. And I say, don't forget, keep your inner candle burning strongly, because most of the adults, regrettably, have let their candle go out, and we can't afford to do that.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, look, brother, thank you very much. I mean, for wanting to really delve down deep into the system and see what's underneath and trust that there's going to be a local uptake and a global uptake of your knowledge.
Yes, that would be nice. And I guess I'd just like to reiterate that the solutions are here. We've got all the solutions available to us. I have no doubt.
Yes.
Spin things on a dime, you know, and all the New Zealand could be organic in 3 years' time.
Thank you.
No doubt.
Thank you.
That's possible. It's just really once the will is in place, that's all that's limiting it. So here's hoping that something like that will occur.
I do too. I hope that very much. Hey, Glenn. Cheers, brother.
Yeah, well, thank you, Tim, for the opportunity to voice these things.
Excellent. Okay, Glenn, catch up soon.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, Glenn, well, look, I'll tell you what. Have you seen all these orange paddocks that they're spraying?
Yeah, Roundup all over.
Well,
yeah.
I need some more photos, because this is most probably the crime of the century going on.
Oh, most definitely. But they spray all over the wheat to ripen the plants. It's just horrendous, because wheat, they get paid on the protein content of the wheat. Now, back in the 80s, when we were growing organic wheat, 7% was what the normal wheat was, and now it's 13%. And the way they get it is that they don't do a test for protein. They say 10% of all nitrates in the plant will be protein. So we'll just measure the nitrates, and then we'll calculate the protein. And so a month or so before harvest, they come along and pile nitrates into the plant to up the protein quota, so they get paid more. But when you do that, it puts the plant back into leaf, and so the fruit won't ripen. And so they come along with Roundup and spray that all over the top of the plant to desiccate the plant. It actually just burns the plant, so it dries it all out. So the wheat kernel looks like wheat, but it's not. It's not a seed. It won't germinate. And, of course, all of that nitrate goes and sits in the gluten. And so people who are gluten intolerant are actually being poisoned by all the nitrates. And then, of course, we put glyphosate over the top of that, and that goes and messes up all the sugar cycle and energy cycle. So it's a disaster. It's a complete immoral, criminal disaster.
Yeah. I'm just so damn astounded. I've talked to Stephen Browning about it. I've talked to so many people about it. I'm just so... The Green Party, they need to go out of business because...
Oh, of course they do. Everybody I know has left the Green Party.
Yeah, they're more interested in the transgender agent.
Yeah, social justice.
Yeah, the planet doesn't exist. They don't understand anything now. Yeah, they don't know that our planet lends them a body, lends them free air, free rainwater, until recently a free food chain. They've completely dissociated themselves from their great sustainer. Oh, Glenn, well, look... I might be passing by in the next year.
Oh, feel free, any time. Call in, we've got a bed.
Oh, God, thank you, brother. Yeah, that'd be really good. I see Greg Hart, too, down there.
Oh, yes.
There old Greg fighting the good fight.
Fighting the good fight, all right.
Yeah. And he says this wonderful thing. He says, I love farming. And
good.
And there are so many farmers who can't say that because they've poisoned the land and they've poisoned the food.
Yes.
And so they're actually embarrassed.
Well, yep, and they're struggling, eh? They're really struggling.
They're struggling.
That system just doesn't work, just a black hole,
yep.
And they, you know.
Yep.
But anyway, that's life.
Yes. Well, look, hey, Glenn, all power to you. I've been to Mount Vernon, where Edward Barks had his home. I've been there. And also I actually went and spent time with the Delaware Laboratories. Do you know about Delaware?
Not offhand.
He was using radionics.
Oh, yes.
And George Delaware, evidently he went into the Amazon, took a photograph of something like about, I don't know, 100 square miles, and then took this photograph and he got some mosquitoes and he got the frequency of those mosquitoes and then he changed the frequency until the frequency sort of went off.
Yep.
And then he projected it onto that photograph.
Yep.
And then they went into the Amazon and all the mosquitoes were dead.
Yep.
And,
right.
And so the drug companies, the big pharmaceutical companies, just knocked him out of a game because they didn't want him playing that. And so this is...
Yeah, it's been suppressed. Radionics is highly suppressed technology.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, it's a good fight and I'll...
Good on you, mate.
And I'll tell you what, we're going to win this one. I can assure you.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm there, ready to bring whatever I've got to the wheel.
Excellent, brother. Catch you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you, Tim.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Glenn Atkinson of GarudaBD.org. GarudaBD.org. I need to get Glenn back another time to be able to discuss the four facets that he mentioned in the start of this program. We need more follow-up. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom. The new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Mueller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. And become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM, and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia Kaha and Haere Uraha.